Hello and welcome to Starcade's monthly teleconference brought to you by kosherclasses.org. I'm Rabbi C. Goldberg, and here is Rabbi
Baruch Beyer. Hello.
Hello, Rabbi Beyer.
Good to be back at the EIK, the Excellence in Contrast microphone.
All right. We're here in Baltimore, Maryland, along with Reb Zev Steen, who is our technical director, and you can join us in two ways. One is through the telephone number 218-895-1203. That's 218-895-1203. And then press 2020 pound. Or you can join us on dimdim.com, D-I-M-D-I-M. And the conference number code there is kosher. And these are new phone numbers, so we hope that we got the numbers out in time to you to be able to join us. Now, this is a monthly conference, the last Wednesday of every month at noon, Eastern. And we've been doing this for quite a few years already, Rabbi Beyer.
Has it been years?
I think so, yeah.
Really?
Maybe a different format. We had it first by telephone, and now we have it by Internet.
That said 3 years.
3 years?
Wow.
Before that, we had it by telegraph. But we're moving along in the technological advances. Today's topic, what we sent out was to discuss the upcoming Starcade Women's Mashkicha Enrichment Program, Mashkicha, for women. And we sent out that we're having that upcoming on Monday.
Right. Yeah.
Monday and Tuesday, your first ever
Very
for Starcade.
Exciting.
I think that this topic engendered a lot of interest.
No pun intended.
and we hold on 1 second. Okay, so we engendered a lot of interest in this in topic both today when we sent out the email, and in general in this topic. We had a call. I had a call last week from the New York Times.
Really?
Not to drop names.
Really?
The New York Times wanted to talk to us about the upcoming class. And before that, we spoke to the Forward. And before that, we spoke to the JTA, the Jewish
Telegraphic something. Yeah.
Something, right, JTA. And so people are interested. What's this all about the women's conference? There is great interest. Besides the emails that we got back in response to our announcing this teleconference about the conference.
Yeah.
We got
back
questions about it. So I think there's interest. If you're joining us by phone, I'm sorry that we had some difficulties until now, but now it seems to be working. Now, how did this conference for women come about? That's what we want to talk about first.
That's a good question. Inquiry lines want to know.
I think the question everybody asks is, why all of a sudden, what's happening all of a sudden in the kosher world that the Starcade is running a Mashkicha conference for women? Is that,
what's the deal?
What's different than last year? So what I told them was that we've had a conference for male Mashkichim. I think it's our seventh year, maybe 6 or 7 years. So some of our women mashkichot asked us if they can have one also.
I think you should preference that preface the fact that we have women mashkichot,
right,
as opposed to some of the agencies who do not.
Right.
So
right. We do have. Now we should also preface what a mashkicha is. Probably.
Good idea.
That would be helpful for somebody who doesn't understand. That's a mashkiach is someone who oversees. And oversees all the kosher production, be it a restaurant or a factory or any facility like that.
Right.
And a mashkicha
is the same thing in the female version.
Right. A woman doing the same job.
Right.
Okay. So so we've had these requests, and we finally decided that this is the year we will have a program. Now the program is not for women who would like to go into the field.
Right. At least in its current form.
We're not necessarily trying to encourage women and or you know bring them in. We don't necessarily have jobs for them. We're not saying that. It's not a job.
Job training program.
Seminar. It's for ladies who already have been doing this work, and there are many people. We have people coming from, Baltimore, Scranton, Columbus, California,
Washington
D.C., okay, Israel, Washington State, okay, Israel.
Someone's coming special from Israel, right? Aren't they? Are they coming special for this?
I mean, I know they're coming and they're from Israel. They arrange their schedule around this course. So, there are definitely women out there. We're trying to help them and their respective organizations that they work for.
Right. We'll enrich their kashrus performance as the
right
title.
So we have how many do we have? We have about 15, 20, which is really full for us because. I mean, we have a big conference room. We could fit a lot more people in the room. But the problem is when you make it too big, then it becomes watered down when we try to train women in the checking for bugs,
right?
For instance. Right. How do you check vegetables for bugs?
Right. So it's a very hands-on process.
It's hands-on. The more people you have, the less it will dilute
the ability to really give over what needs to be taken. It needs to be given over properly.
Right. So, and when we go especially to a restaurant or a caterer or a hotel to show the women what we do and how we set it up,
right.
That space is very limited. Right?
Right. When we take the men, how many men do we do? We have to break it up.
The men, we have more men in the conference, and we have maybe 25, 30 men, but we go in two groups.
Right.
That's a whole week course, and therefore we have the ability to do that. This is only 2 days. We couldn't work it out, so we limited it, and that makes it for a better class overall for the women that do come.
Yes.
You may ask, Rabbi Beyer,
why is
it only 2 days when the men get 5 days?
Four days.
Men get 4 days.
It crossed my mind, but I wasn't going to ask that unless you brought it up, so I'm going to put you on the spot. Why is the women's class only?
They asked me that on the phone.
And what's the New York Times?
I think it's the New York Times. One of the agencies asked me why is it only 2 days, and what we explained to them was that the men we take them, for instance, to see shechita, slaughtering in a ritual slaughterhouse.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to take the ladies to see ritual slaughtering. Why? I mean, maybe there's some interesting women who might, not going there. Maybe they'd be squeamish, maybe not. Maybe they'd like to see it.
Personally, I don't like looking at shit either.
But the men, there aren't any women shochtim. There aren't any certified women who are, that's not, for whatever reason, they don't do that. That we don't have, and we don't use women in the slaughterhouse.
As shochtim or as meshkitim.
Or as meshkitim at all, right. So it would be a theoretical experience. There's really no need for that. We're trying to give them very practical. For instance, we're going to show Rabbi Heinemann created a video recently that's not been released yet, but we're going to show it at this course.
This is the premiere.
Premiere.
Okay.
No popcorn, though, Rabbi Bayer, so don't.
Red carpet.
So they, about how to check a chicken, or not how to check, but how to notice when you have a question on a chicken and how to resolve it. When is the question, not how to resolve it halachically, but is it a question that needs to be brought to the rabbi or is it not a question that doesn't, and therefore does not need to be brought to the rabbi? And for thousands of years, women in the kitchen knew these things. They knew when something is a question on a chicken and when it's not. But nowadays, all the chickens you buy come certified, right? But that does not mean that there cannot be a question on a chicken.
Absolutely. And that's why, and this is really very much practical because they're in the kitchens.
They're in the kitchens. They're seeing broken bones on the chickens.
Right.
As we get calls sometimes, right? And it still happens. You know, nothing is perfect. It was not a perfect world. So you have to be on the lookout.
Right.
And you don't know what to do when you find a broken chicken. You throw out that leg or you throw out the whole chicken or you throw out, you don't know what to do. So that's a very important, that's a very practical thing that we're trying to do. I just want to welcome everyone again and station identification. We're here in Baltimore at the Star K for the teleconference, the monthly teleconference. You can join us by web.
The EIK Network.
That's the second time that we had
We're trying to get that. trying to get that into the normal lingo.
And then the and by telephone, you can join us as well. The numbers on the screen here, I notice the dim-dim, which tell you how to dial in, are incorrect right now. That will not bring you into the teleconference. Just the numbers we sent out by email. If you have a question, we enjoy taking questions, and we want to hear your comments. You can chat to us easily. Just type into the chat box that should be on the right-hand part of your screen, or click Show Chat, and you'll be able to type in there. In a couple of minutes, we're going to take questions also, if there are any, by telephone. So please do chime in, because we want to have your input. One of the questions I got was, how many women work in this field? The New York Times actually asked me that question. How many women, mashgichot, work in the United States as kosher supervisors?
Good question.
What would you say, Rabbi Bayer?
I would say 100.
100. I said less, because I know, let's say, the Star K has a handful, maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6,
mm-hmm.
right? And then, you know, there are organizations out there that use... It really depends how you define mashgicha, right?
Right.
If you're talking about somebody who's hired by an agency, I think there's probably less than 100, I'd say maybe 50 or 60. But if you're talking about women who are responsible for the kashrus in their shul or in their school, and they're the ones really, bottom line, being used, then it's not in an official capacity. I think it's probably many more than that.
Right. I would agree with that.
Yeah. How many men are there working, let's say, full-time?
Full-time mashgichim?
Yeah.
Hundreds.
Hundreds, maybe 1,000.
Something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Talking about in the United States.
In the United States,
yeah.
Right. I mean, there are probably thousands that work
right.
part-time.
Right.
But you know, we you know, so a rabbi in a far-flung community, he could be going into one or two factories. He's also a mashgiach.
Not to mention much people who are mashgichim in restaurants and, you know, New York alone, there must be...
That's true. I'm just saying, it depends how you define mashgiach as someone who's responsible for kashrus or someone who's an official mashgiach.
Why do you think it took so long for us to have a program like this? We've had mashgichot for a long time.
Well, you could ask the same question about the men's program.
Well, we've had that for the past 7 years.
Okay, well... It's only been a little bit that they asked for it, and we put it together.
Uh-huh.
I thought you don't want to put me on the spot, Rabbi Bayer. Sorry.
I thought maybe there was some sort of, you know.
No, there's no particular reason. I mean, it's something we do as a public service. There's no charge to the ladies or the men. It takes quite a bit of time and
effort
and planning and to produce it, and it's something that, you know. It's not something we just snap our fingers and say, okay, let's have a program
mm-hmm.
for the ladies. I hope that when they come here, they think that it was easy, because that shows that the program is running smoothly.
Right.
But there's always a lot of work that goes behind it. Now, we can't discuss this issue without referencing the famous response of Rav Moshe Feinstein, who was asked whether or not a woman could be a mashgicha. Why is there even a question? There are two aspects to this that he deals with. One is, this he deals with very, very briefly, do we trust the woman to do kashrus? And, you know, basically the answer is yes. I mean, we do. There's no
reason. We trust them every day.
We trust them in our own kitchens. There's no
right.
reason not to. He just basically dismisses anybody who would want to say that that women are not have some problem in trust. There's no issue with that. But he does reference another halachic issue, an issue in Jewish law, which is a woman is required to have tznius, modesty. And there is, according to some opinions, a prohibition on a woman having a position of authority over men. It's called srora. Like a position of being in charge and bossing people around.
Mm-hmm.
according to some opinions, and he deals with that. A woman who's, not that a woman should be in the kitchen, but she should perhaps not assert herself in that way over men. She can be, there are many positions that women can have, but perhaps not at the
because that's thrower. That's felt to be something which would be detrimental to her modesty.
Her modesty, I think so.
That's modesty, not in the clothing sense.
Not in the clothing sense, right.
But in a behavioral sense,
right.
In the way that she deals with the community.
Right, exactly. Thank you. And so her emotion says the following. He says that if she's working for herself, if she has her own kashrus business, that would be a problem. But if she is simply hired by an agency, by the Rav HaMakshir, by the rabbinic authority, the agency that certifies, let's say the Star K or the OU, and she is responsive to those needs and to those directives of the agency, so she's not really in charge. Now, if she goes into a facility, let's say she's at a caterer and he gets a shipment of something that's non-kosher and non-approved, what is she going to do? She'll say, you can't, you know, can't
right.
use it. She'll put it to the side.
Right.
Right? But she's just following the rules that the Star K has told her.
Right.
That these are the things that are allowed in this facility. This is the way, you know, these utensils are allowed to be used. These are not allowed to be used. She's following the rules of this facility. And moreover, if the proprietor has any complaint, he can go to he can call up the agency, he can call up the rabbi, and he can complain and say, listen, I don't agree with what your mashgiach did. And you can do it by a male mashgiach also. And they do it by a male mashgiach.
Right.
They definitely do it. They call, they go over the heads of the mashgiach because they understand the mashgiach is just following orders. And they say, what? The rabbi didn't really say this. So you're going overboard with this. It's not really, that's not really the rule.
Right.
Or if it is the rule, I'm going to try to change the rule. So they can go, they go over the heads of the mashgiach and they go to the what we call the Rav HaMakshir. To the rabbi who's actually certifying, and they can complain. So it's not, the Rav Moshe Feinstein says that when a woman is working as a mashgicha, as long as she's following directives of the agency, it's not considered to be a sorora, a position of
authority.
Such authority that would be, there would be any problem. So that's the halachic basis for it, and we follow that ruling. Though you follow that ruling, many agencies across the country and across the world follow that ruling as well. It's just that we are more maybe explicit about our using. We talk about it more. We're not, you know, embarrassed. I think that's why it wasn't really. That's why when all these newspapers heard about this, they were, wow, there are women who work as mashgichot.
Right. I think it's important to mention also that, at least in my experience, dealing with some of the women mashgichot who work for the Star K, they are not just at least as careful and conscientious as the men, but sometimes more so. Some of our best, toughest mashgichim are actually mashgichot.
They're the best man for the job.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you.
Right. So they, I know. That's definitely true. The women, they won't, bend. This
right.
is the rule. The Star K said this is the rule.
Right.
So they will follow that to the T. Yes, they make very good mashgichos. Again, I want to mention if anybody wants to chat with us online or ask us anything, we're more than interested in hearing from you.
Aside from the bug checking and
you want to talk about what we're going to be covering. But we're going to take questions. If anybody wants to ask a question by telephone, you can unmute yourself by pressing, I think, *6, and then we'll take your question. Okay, so you want to know what the topics are. Okay, well, the main topic that's going to be hours and hours of discussion is how does Mashkiach perform his job in the restaurant or hotel or nursing home that she's working at?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need to think about in terms of Shabbos, right? Or you can turn on fires, you can't turn on fires. You can, or fridges, how do you deal with them? How do you deal with the other workers in the kitchen. Right, you're a mashgiach, so what kind of job are you? Are you you're more like FBI, or you're like, how do you get along with the people? Obviously, you're not the FBI. I'm saying that facetiously.
What should your attitude be?
What should your attitude be? How do you best? You mentioned how to check for bugs. We're also going to have a session on the Sabbath mode issues. Right, we have StarKey certified Sabbath mode ovens, refrigerators, and the woman who answers most of those calls is Mrs. Goldman. And she's going to be speaking on that topic because she's the most qualified to do so, because she's the one that answers those questions. Again, we've provided her with the answers for those questions. And if she doesn't know, she asks the rabbi who's guiding her. But she's the one that on a day-to-day basis, she deals with questions, and many, many questions that we get about that. So she's going to be speaking about those issues. We have a visit to the Hyatt Hotel, where we keep a kosher kitchen.
Nice.
And we have a visit to another facility where we have a dairy and a meat service in the same restaurant.
Wow. Look at that. Where's that?
That's at the JCC in Owings Mills.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So we provide dairy and meat, and that's not so simple how to do that.
No, it's
you have to keep it, make sure it's separate, and there's a mashgiach there the whole time, and so on and so forth. So we're going to take them there, because you don't want to go to a simple place, then there's no chiddush, right? There's nothing new to see. You want to go to a place where it's complicated to set up so that you teach.
Yeah,
because these women are already working in the kitchen, right? We're not starting from ABC.
I think a JCC is a good idea also, because I know a number of communities out of town. The JCCs will have a restaurant, and that might be the only restaurant in town.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a
One thing we're not doing is going to we're not going to factories. We don't employ women as mashgichot in the factories.
Okay.
Now why is that?
I was going to ask you the same question.
We don't do it.
Why is that?
Yeah, that's one of the questions actually we got back today was, do you allow women to be mashgichim at restaurants? What about factories? The restaurants, yes. What about factories?
Has that ever come up?
Actually, do we have mashgichim actually working in restaurants? Can't answer that question. We have them at,
caterers.
The caterers, right.
I mean, that's as good as a restaurant,
right.
Basically.
I don't think it's on purpose. I think we would allow a woman mashgicha at a restaurant. I don't know why we wouldn't.
And I think
we
would also.
But generally, they don't.
Why wouldn't they work at
the
factory?
Yeah. Like the,
I don't know why a woman would not be able to work at a factory necessarily. I don't know if it's ever come up.
I know that we don't have any, but I'm not sure how to answer that question.
You know, I think we've had, and I might be wrong, but I think there might have been situations where we've had a woman fill in a factory situation, maybe?
Could be.
I think we might have had...
Right, we're not against it, per se, but I don't know. I can't really answer that question.
For the most part, most of the women who are employed as mashgichot are working in food service situations, which is why going to a factory is really not that much of a necessity in a class like this.
Okay, now there was an entire article on this, among other places, in the Mishpacha magazine, which is a Jewish weekly. Yes, and
right up there with the New York Times.
And for that article, they interviewed a number of the mashgichot that we have. And for instance, they spoke with Emuna Friedman, who's one of our mashgichot.
Yes.
She supervised an AIPAC convention. AIPAC is the American Israeli Public Affairs Committee, and she was working, she writes, 10 hours on Friday.
That's a huge convention.
Shabbos.
If people have never been there, it's in D.C. once a year. It's huge. Thousands of people attend it.
Right.
And big-name people, senators, the president usually speaks there. And they're careful to make it kosher, which is very interesting, because most of the attendees are not don't keep kosher in their homes. But, yeah, that's a very large and complicated event.
Right, so she says, you can't imagine how much food you go through in a weekend feeding 6,500 people, three meals a day. The amount of advanced 20,000 meals. The amount of advanced prep work is enormous, too. Koshering the silverware alone took 3 days.
Mm.
3 days to kosher the silverware. Imagine. They koshered more than 20 ovens. And after the event, we had to seal up every single crate, holding about 3,500 dishes. The truck, too, had to be sealed and then resealed after the Secret Service looked into it.
Mm.
And she writes another event at the Israeli ambassador's house. Security staff wanted to inspect the food. And they sent out all the staff from the kitchen so they could inspect the food to make sure there was nothing awry with the food, with no, you know, nothing suspicious. Mm-hmm. But Emunah said, I stay. I'm not leaving this kitchen. I'm the mashkicha, and I stay. So she didn't, she did that. She did
her job. The Israeli Secret Service, and
that's right.
They blinked.
That's right. She stayed.
That's it.
Another mashkicha writes that she was working in a facility, and somebody came into the kitchen to ask, "Where's the mashkicha? I'd like to speak with the mashkicha." And she said, this mashkicha said, "Well, here I am." So he looked at her like, "Wow, I've never seen that before. You came from out of town." You never.
Uh-huh.
So she said, "Well, listen, if you don't believe me, here's the number of the agency that hired me. You can call them and ask them." So he was, hesitant a little bit. So she said to him, "By the way, who is the mashkiach in your kitchen at home? Right? Your wife. So, what's wrong with it?" So, the women who are mashkichas, they're good and they do their job. But that's basically, I think that gives a good overview of what we're going to be doing this coming Monday. If there are any questions, we're willing and more than happy to take them either by chat or by phone. Rabbi, you mentioned to me before the show that you had something to talk about with reference to a visit that you made, or?
Well, no, these were just
not related to the women mashkichos.
No, totally different. Just related to kashrus, obviously. I just thought that these were recent examples of situations that where you see how careful one has to be when it comes to kashrus and to certifications, and how you have to make sure that every agency is really doing the utmost to make sure that that the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. One example, I had a company that was packing herbal teas recently.
Herbal teas, okay.
Herbal teas up in a facility here on the East Coast. And an herbal tea typically, as long as it doesn't contain added flavors, is a simple product, and it doesn't really require a kosher certification, or at least not that intense a kosher certification, as something like a flavored tea or a flavored coffee, things like that. So just as a matter of course, and as part of the procedure that we usually follow when we certify a new company, I asked them to send me copies of the proposed labels.
Right.
And as I was looking at these labels, it struck me that there were the words "Made in Israel."
Wow.
And I was shocked. Made in Israel, because this is happening in a big city here on the East Coast of the U.S. And once you have...
Which I noticed that you're not telling us which city, so that nobody should be able to figure out.
That's right.
That's proprietary.
Well, whatever the case is, So it just struck me as, first of all, obviously, if it's herbs coming from Israel, then that changes the whole complexion of the certification.
Because you'd have to make sure that
they were properly tithed, exactly.
Or other issues.
Comes has to come in with proper certification.
That's a side note. Companies have sometimes difficulty understanding that if something could be accepted if it's made domestically without any real certification, but if it comes from Israel,
it's more complicated.
They think it should be more kosher.
Right.
And so I explained to them, it's more holy, but because of that holy status, it needs more care.
So, the people actually who are running this company were Jewish and Israeli, but they had no idea what could be the issue. But obviously, you know, we stopped the we didn't actually give that certification because the herbs didn't come in properly certified. But it was just an example of something which easily could have been overlooked. Thankfully, we didn't. But you know, you have to have an agency that has it in their procedures to make sure that everything is really
Now let me ask you what over carefully. Right? And did we send a mashgiach or mashgicha into that facility beforehand, or he hadn't gone there yet?
He had been there recently, but he had not seen this packaging. This was new packaging.
Oh, this is a new thing.
There was no way to really tell.
Right,
yeah.
a new item
yeah.
that's coming out.
Yeah.
So it was made in Israel, or just
the herbs are actually grown in Israel?
And they have to write on the package made in Israel.
I don't know if they have to, but I think they wanted to because that was the whole. They were the name of the tea had something to do with Italian to Israel. That was part of the marketing campaign.
I see. Okay. All right. So it was a new marketing campaign. So we just wanted. So you caught it. Very good advice.
Yeah. Thank God.
Okay. We had Siavad Shmaya, help of God. All right. Thank you very much for joining us. So if there are any last questions.
I have a question.
Yes. Go ahead.
I was wondering if you can arm women with what kind of arguments people give to say that women shouldn't be in the kitchen doing these jobs. Because obviously some people are uncomfortable with it, and if the women that are working out in the field have, information to explain to people. I mean, you did mention Rabbi Feinstein, but if there's, mm-hmm. you know, anything else, that you could either hand out at the conference or, you know, arm these women when people come to them, you know, with their skepticism or whatever.
Right.
I was wondering if
I thought when you first said arm the woman, I was afraid you meant something else.
I didn't mean with concealed carry. I meant, you know, intellectually.
Intellectually arm them with arguments that they could use back. Well, it's a good point, and we have put out in our PR for this course some pretty extensive discussion of this response of Rav Moshe, and he's really the one that we're relying on because Rav Moshe Feinstein was the greatest halachic authority in his time. He died maybe 20 years ago.
More than 20 years ago.
But he was the greatest authority at that time worldwide, and so we have that response to rely on. And yes, we'll it's a good idea. We'll print it up in English and give it out. Are you coming to our conference?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. All right. So you're going to hold me to it then? I feel like I could maybe get away with it, but no, it's a very good idea. We will take that into account. One of the people, just going back a second, one of the magazines asked me, why is it that there are those who don't use women mashgichot? Why there are agencies that don't use them? I didn't really get into it. It wasn't my place to explain to her. If she wants to find out why they don't use it, she should call them. But what I think is that they have a different view, really. They may rely on other opinions, Jewish law is like that there are various opinions. We have a very solid basis to rely on this response from Rav Moshe Feinstein, but they may have other reasoning. You know, it's not just that they look askance at women, they look down at women. It doesn't have to be just that. It could be part of that also. But it could be a legitimate halachic dispute. Why others wouldn't use women. But the OU uses women, and the SARK uses women, and I'm sure that the other major agencies use women as mashgichot, and it's just, I think, now becoming more widely known than it wasn't in the past. Any further questions?
Not today.
Okay. All right, then we'll see you at the course on Monday.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. This is this has been the Star K monthly teleconference with Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg and Rabbi Beyer. Please join us again next month at the same website and at the same telephone numbers that you've dialed into. I'll just repeat the phone numbers in case you want to write it down. It's 218-895-1203. 218-895-1203. Conference number 2020 pound. Thank you very much and have a very good day. Take care.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye.